The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back to our program, and we've got a busy first hour. Gentry Estes, a lot of conversation as well about the Eddie George hire. And we'll talk about some perhaps new rules in college football recruiting coming up here in just a moment. And later on, we'll take a look at the NFL draft with Mina Kimes. More of your phone calls right now at 855-242-7285. And let's talk to Larry, who is up next. Hello, Larry.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Hey there.
Calling in reference to your conversation, I like your opinion, please. Your conversation about Nashville and how they draw on football Saturday. I think one of the problems Tennessee State faces is they're in the OVC. They tend to draw a little better when they play a HBCU school. Example, they play Jackson State every second Saturday in September,
right,
which draws around 60,000. And I think the HBCU draw is a little better than the PWI draw. So I think you have alumni coming in from out of town just for that game as you do in the other game. But I think that the 30,000, 35,000, 40,000 draw versus the 80,000 is you aren't comparing apples to apples, basically what I'm saying. And just like your opinion on that. I think
Larry, may I ask Larry, may I ask you a question? I'm curious about this. You know, for those who don't understand, HBCU schools, that's for stands for historically black colleges and universities. What's the distinction between a Jackson State and a Tennessee State, if you know it?
There's no difference. I mean, they're both HBCUs.
Okay. They're just in different leagues. Is that the difference?
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Jackson State in SWAC and Southwestern Athletic Conference.
Right. Okay.
Tennessee State is in Ohio Valley Conference. So you'll see those, the Grambling Southern draw, the Alabama A&M, Alabama State draw in Birmingham. You're familiar with that.
Yeah, by the way, that game is, interestingly, that game is this week, because of the Spring Football League.
That's the spring version. Of course, everybody waits for that last Saturday in October.
Yeah, I've been to Larry. I'll tell you, I've been to that game. That game in Birmingham is one of the truly social events of the year. I've also not to try to overwhelm you with my HBCU background, but I've covered the Southern Grambling game at the Superdome, and I'm not sure I've ever seen anything quite like that.
Yes. And I think that's the difference in what you see at Tennessee State, how well they draw for the Nashville crowd depends on who they're playing.
Exactly.
That's basically my point. So I think there's still a draw for Tennessee State. And I think that they need to get out of the OVC and join the SWAC.
It's an interesting question, Larry, thank you. We've had a couple of conversations with Tennessee State folks in the past, and that could be if we talk to Eddie this week, we'll ask that question. That could be a very salient question. Let's get back to the calls and check in with Tom, who is in Dallas. Hey, Tom, thanks.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Tom, I am well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. I've been meaning to call in on this subject for a while. A number of people calling the program saying Texas and Texas A&M should play in a non-conference game, but I don't know A&M's future non-conference schedule, but I can tell you Texas. Play Arkansas this next year, home and home with Alabama, home and home with Ohio State, home and home with Michigan, home and home with Florida, home and home with Georgia over 11 years. Now, why should Texas add another difficult non-conference game if the goal is to try to get to the playoffs?
Tom, I agree with you. That was a great game, but at this point, neither team really needs the other one at all. And unless it's a first game of the season type of situation, there's no point. To play that game where it used to be played, which was Thanksgiving Day or that weekend, is foolish at this point.
Well, I appreciate your opinion on it because you're very bright. And one other thing, I watch you on TV, and when you go off to the radio, I don't know what station you're on. The program is on here in the Dallas-Fort Worth
okay.
area.
Yeah,
if it's Sirius XM.
Well, Tom, let me explain because we have a complicated situation. We are syndicated by ESPN Radio, which means that we are on the ESPN Radio channel on Sirius XM. ESPN Radio has two channels, 80 and 81. We are on 81. And then we are also syndicated through other means in various markets. I'm not sure we're on terrestrial radio in Dallas, but you can always get us either on Sirius or through some other digital mean.
Okay, because I hate it when I have to.
No, I understand. Yeah, I mean that happens. Tom, thank you. That happens, and listen, there's a lot of live programming, and this network was devised and developed to broadcast events and games. So there are those occasions that we will go off the air early, or there's one or two times during conference tournaments, so we may be on a more limited schedule. So it really depends on, in terms, you can always get us on the ESPN radio or the ESPN app. It's not that complicated. You can always get us on satellite radio, and in a lot of places you can get us on your local dial. So there you have it. Thanks for asking, though. I'm glad. I should probably mention that more often. Matt is up next in Kentucky. And Matt, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Matt, we're doing well. Thank you.
So my question was about Kentucky basketball. John Calipari has been bringing in all these transfers and all these no longer one and done players. Are we becoming a school that goes and gets transfers, or are we still a one and done school?
That's a good question. I'm not sure what Kentucky is right now. I know what John wanted it to be, and I don't know if he's amended his comments from 4 or 5 years ago when he said the biggest night of the year in Kentucky basketball is the night of the NBA draft. I think he'd like to walk that one back, wouldn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. But I do like his comments the other night or a couple weeks ago when he was like, Kentucky will be back. Just wait and see. Bad year, it happens. But I just didn't know if we're going to become like a transfer portal school, just like we were with the one and done when it first started.
I think that is a great question, Matt, and I think the immediate future of Kentucky basketball may hang in the balance. Appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Heading to a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We're going to get into one of the bigger issues in recruiting in a minute with Tom Barron-Heron about this dead period. What's up with that? Coming up next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back here on a Monday afternoon, and we mentioned this briefly at the beginning of the program. There could be some changes ahead when it comes to recruiting, and Tom Barron-Heron is going to join us momentarily. He has done a really extensive look into what college football recruiting will look like when the dead period ends. Good question. Tom joins us right now. Tom, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. Before we get too deep into this, how did all this come about in the first place?
Well, it seems like it's been forever, but the NCAA created a dead period last March within the recruiting calendar because of the pandemic. So what that means is prospects were not allowed to visit campuses and coaches weren't allowed to visit high schools. They weren't allowed to have camps. Basically, no in-person visits or contact with the prospect and the coaches. And initially, Paul, when that happened back in March, I think a lot of coaches thought maybe this would last a few weeks. And now here we are all the way into April, and we still have the dead period among us. And it just got extended and extended out until now. And it looks like the Division I Council on April 15th, they're going to vote on whether or not they should lift this dead period and if they should allow visits going forward and alter the recruiting calendar for these coaches.
And yeah, I mean, so many things happened last March and April that it's hard to keep them all down or to digest them. But Tom, we've seen an entire calendar year go by. What is the prospect of this being eliminated?
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Well, I think it looks good. And all the coaches and the personnel directors that I've spoken to, they all say they are expecting this to happen. And they think June 1st could be when visits are allowed and the dead period is lifted. I actually had a personnel director tell me he thinks if it is lifted, he thinks it's going to be like Disneyland opening for the first time, that recruits are going to want to come in droves and everyone's going to want to come to visit and want to come to campus. So I think everybody right now is preparing for those visits to happen. However, they don't really have a lot of guidance onto what's going to happen. Ryan Day, Ohio State's head coach, spoke today to reporters, and he said he doesn't really know yet if it's going to be official visits in June where the programs can pay for the prospects to visit, or if they're going to be unofficial visits. They also don't know yet if they're going to be allowed to work the players out in an NFL pro day-like workout when the prospects come to campus, because they've missed on so many evaluation opportunities. Like I said, they haven't been able to have camps. They haven't been able to go out to high schools. There's a thought out there that the NCAA might allow coaches to do these individual workouts on campus just to try to catch up and try to catch up within the evaluation process and get things back on track. So there's still a lot that they don't know yet. They're waiting for guidance on what they can do. But I think a lot of them, the majority of them, are prepping and preparing for June 1st to allow these visits and allow prospects back on campus.
In your reporting, and it's quite an in-depth look into where we are, I'm particularly curious on how this has changed, obviously it has, the landscape of recruiting and the pros and the cons and who has benefited and who hasn't.
Yeah, I think a lot is going to change going forward. And what we've seen is we really have coaches adapt to the whole process, because the recruiting process can't stop. You have to continue to recruit. And so what they've done is they've adapted with technology, Zoom calls, FaceTime calls. We've seen virtual visits through Zoom. In that story, I've got a prospect in his family that spent 2 hours with the Oklahoma staff on a virtual visit through Zoom, where he got to visit It basically threw the video camera on his computer, and he got to see the facilities. He got to get to know the coaches, an academic presentation. And I talked to a lot of coaches and personnel directors about that going forward and how that might impact the process after the visits are allowed, once prospects can still get on campus. And they all said they think they're going to integrate that into the recruiting process and keep that, maybe replace that with the first initial visit, where in the past you'd answer a ton of questions for the prospect and their families in person. Now they think they can do that through video calls and try to get all of those questions answered before the prospect actually gets on campus, and then get them there, and they can really spend more time getting to know them, building the relationship. Now, I think some of the problems that they're going to have going forward, Paul, with this is, like I said, they don't have a lot of guidance. And what that includes, what I mentioned before, with whether they're official or unofficial visits. But they also don't now know if they're going to be limited in how many prospects can visit each week or each day, because we're still within the pandemic. And we've seen in the spring, a lot of these teams have already been dealing with high testing numbers. A few teams have already had to pause things in spring. So you've got to deal with bringing people from across the country on your campus, keeping your testing numbers low. Are they going to test prospects when they get there? I had a personnel director tell me he doesn't think it's logical to test prospects, because he said if you have a prospect visit and they test positive, what are we going to do? Are we going to put them in a hotel for 14 days and not let him leave? It's not possible. So there's still a lot of questions that are going to go forward with this, and how they're going to navigate this. It's going to be a big challenge for them. But as we've seen throughout the past year, they've adapted, and I think they'll adapt again once they're allowed to have visits and once they're allowed to have these prospects on campus.
Tom, beyond what's happening off the field, can you give us any sense on what's happening in terms of recruiting? Because, you know, it seems like commitments come so early, and is the challenges are there. But away from the legislation and when it will come, when it will go, what is happening in college recruiting right now?
Well, it's kind of this back and forth right now. There's really so much up in the air, because we talk about the uncertainty with the visits. On the coaches' side, we mentioned what the problems are there. For recruits, I've talked to some prospects who have said their process has slowed down, because these recruits, some of the prospects, they're building relationships with these coaches through a computer screen. Some of them have never even met the coaches in person, and they're trying to make decisions that are going to impact the rest of their lives. So it's slowed down the process for them. A lot of them are waiting to see if they can take visits and when, and then that'll help them make their decisions down the line. But what we're also dealing with is, and we've mentioned this before, I've been on talking with this about this on your show, is the issues that coaches are having right now with managing their roster with the extra scholarships, because of an extra year of eligibility that the NCAA allowed players to have. We don't really know how many scholarships they're going to have available beyond this year. So now coaches are also trying to manage the whole recruiting process. They're trying to manage their roster numbers. Recruits are trying to evaluate the process themselves. It has been a really, really challenging year for these prospects in particular. I think this 2022 class and even the 2023 prospects, I think they're the first ones that are getting hit with all of this the hardest. And actually Michigan offensive coordinator Josh Gattis, he told reporters he thinks this is going to be the most challenging year in recruiting that coaches and recruits have seen because of those challenges we just laid out. So it's going to be a back and forth. Everybody on each side is going to be feeling each other out, trying to navigate the process together.
So help me understand, because I'm naturally confused. I know everyone was given the additional year. When does that year come and go?
Oh, that's a great question, because I think that's a common misconception that I think naturally your mind says, well, it was just the seniors that were given the extra year of eligibility because they might miss out. But it was everybody. So every player from this past season can technically take advantage of an extra year of eligibility. So from the coaches that I've talked to, they've said, listen, I this past year we had true freshmen on campus already. Now we're bringing in the 2021 recruits over this spring and over summer. And this upcoming season, because those past true freshmen technically have an extra year, this coming season, we could now have 40 true freshmen on campus at once. So that's where it causes the problems for coaches, where you've got players who they were juniors this past season. Now they're still juniors. Sophomores are still sophomores. And that's going to carry on until those players are off campus and they're off scholarship. So it's going to be a constant, over the next 3 years, it's going to be a constant struggle for coaches to try to navigate that process, because the NCAA created a rule where this coming season in 2021, the coaches can go over the 85 total scholarship limit by however many seniors they had on the roster last year. So that'll help with this year, but they don't have a rule yet beyond this year to go over the 85 total scholarship limit. And as I just mentioned, they're going to have every player on their roster has an extra year of eligibility. So there's going to have to be a rule eventually beyond this year to either go over 85 or somehow accommodate for the extra scholarships, because as of right now, they're heading for a collision course where they're either going to have to cut scholarship players or they're going to have to eliminate high school prospects from their recruiting classes.
Any idea if there is some entity out there that's a beneficiary of all this?
You know, I think the rich get richer, right? The elite programs are going to be shielded from a lot of this stuff. They're going to be protected from a lot of this because they're still going to get the top prospects. They have enough money to navigate this. When you talk about extra scholarships, that costs money. And a lot of these smaller programs, they're already dealing with deficits right now. They're already cutting sports. So they're going to feel the impact from that. The more elite programs, the bigger programs, they're not going to feel the financial strain from a lot of this. And throughout the whole process, as we navigate the recruiting process, they haven't felt as big of a hurt as the smaller schools that maybe need those prospects to get on campus. So the Alabamas, the Clemsons, Ohio State, Georgia, those schools, they've been humming along in recruiting, and I think they're going to be just fine throughout this whole process, navigating it going forward. But it's those smaller schools that I think we're going to have to watch to see if they're negatively impacted by all this.
Quite an incredible conversation with Tom Van Heeren. Tom, thank you very much. I knew this was a mess. I didn't realize it was quite the calamity that you laid out here. Thank you. Come back soon.
Thank you.
Great stuff. We will take a break. We'll digest that. We'll figure it all out. We have more guests to come, including a look at the draft, which is only 2.5 weeks away. That's in the next hour. And we are back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome you back here, 90 minutes in, and more of your phone calls straight ahead, 855-242-7285. Mina Kimes on the NFL draft coming up here in the next hour. And let's get right back to the calls and check in with Rick, who is in Alabama. Hello, Rick.
How you doing, Mr. Feinbaum?
We are doing great. Thank you.
This is your I-95, buddy.
Oh, my goodness. How you been?
I'm doing real well. Thank you. I hope you're staying safe out there.
We are doing great.
I've got a bet with this guy, and I think he's wrong, but I know that you would answer this question for me. Has Alabama ever tore down the goalpost after a win? I'm saying it's never happened, and he says it has happened. Could you help me out?
Well, I will tell you this. To the best of my knowledge, I have never seen it happen. And I remember many, many years ago writing an article about what would it take for Alabama to tear down the goalpost, and I had a lot of blowback from that article, people saying we will never do that. And you and I both know, I can tell you how many times I've been to a game, whether it was the Auburn-Alabama game in 82 or the Tennessee-Alabama game in 84, when the goalpost came down and you would have thought the world was coming to an end.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, I appreciate it. I know that you would know. And I'm still hoping to bring you a DVD when you're in Birmingham, especially the Nothing But a Winner when Coach Bryant died.
Well, Rick, I should be there reasonably soon, and I will let you know when I get back to town. It's been a while, obviously. I haven't been to Birmingham in over a year. But it is such an interesting concept because, you know, tearing down the goalposts has become part of the lore of sports. And somebody's going to have to help me, but at least in my memory, which is, you know, covers a number of years, I never remember in all the time I lived in Alabama from the 80s on a situation where Alabama fans, it's happened when Alabama was an underdog, but I would have to defer to somebody else on that. But if you know of an incident, let us know, because at least in the last 40 years, it has not happened. Let's get back to the calls and check out who we got here. Leroy up next in Georgia. Hello, Leroy. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing, sir?
I am well. Thank you for calling.
Great. Paul, longtime listener. Love your show. First-time caller.
Thank you.
I would like to mention what you started about the rivalry in the SEC teams. My first Georgia game was in 1959. I saw Francis Tarkington and Pat Dye beat Auburn 14-13. The next game, I think, was with Georgia Tech, which was in the SEC at that time, and Georgia won that game to win the SEC championship. Went on to play Missouri, I believe, in the Orange Bowl, and won that game also. But Georgia Tech's no longer in the SEC. And first of all, I thought Alabama-Auburn would be the biggest rivalry, but that's over in the West. I'm in the East. Georgia-Florida, to me, has got to be the biggest rivalry for Georgia. Well, there's too many parties, just too many things going on with that particular game. But I say Georgia-Florida is that game in the SEC East that is the biggest rivalry.
Yeah, Leroy, I think there are a lot of rivalries out there. And when I made that comment 90 minutes ago, I was talking about buzz, conversation right now. Historically, it's a different question. Alabama-Auburn, even Florida LSU is a very intense rivalry. Ole Miss, Mississippi State. But I was speaking of just pure conversation right now on this program. I hear more about Florida, Georgia than anything else.
Right. One other thing I wanted to mention. Last week, you talked about one of my most favorite people, Louis Grizzard. I live right outside of Athens. I've never known or never met Mr. Grizzard, but I've read a lot of stuff. I know who he is. I have a lot of friends who know him, and I love him to death. He's one of my most favorite people. First time I ever met him was at a meeting at a place in Ponte Vedra, Florida. It was an automobile business meeting where automobile owners and managers was down there. And he talked about his, I think, first heart surgery. And the doctors came in and told him they wanted to replace a valve in his heart, that they were going to use a pig valve that worked real successfully in other operations. And his comment was, "You're going to do what?" They went on into detail about the surgery and everything, and he said, "Well, go ahead." So they did the surgery, put the pig valve in Lewis's heart, and then after the surgery, when he was in recovery, well, this was a couple of weeks later, according to Lewis, after some time to recoup from the surgery, they asked him how he was feeling. He said, "Great." He said, "I have no problems at all." He said, "Other than I feel like I want to make love in the mud." And one other story, quickly. This was in the AJC, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Georgia played South Carolina, the Georgia Bulldogs in the South Carolina Gamecocks. I think South Carolina was favored. A linebacker for the University of Georgia, his last name was Dix, D-I-C-K-S, was injured and was out for this particular game and wasn't going to be able to play. But Georgia played South Carolina, and Georgia won. The headline in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution sports section the next day was, Dogs beat Cox with Dix out.
Leroy, I can't thank you enough, and I hope this is not the last call we ever have on this show. But if it is, we made the most out of it. Hey, thank you very much. Louis Grizzard, were he alive today, would be a regular on this show, and every time after he was on, we would probably have to apologize for the next week. He was the all-time humorist, and I'm so glad people still remember him many, many years after his passing. We will take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Great to have all of you here on a Monday afternoon, and Chris is up next. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Mr. Feinbaum. How you doing, sir?
Real well. Thank you.
Yes, sir. About your fans storming the field, if you remember the 85 Iron Bowl in Birmingham, the fans stormed the field, but we didn't tear down the goalposts. I think that's about the closest fans have ever come to, if they could have got their hands on the goalpost, they probably would have got their hands on the goalpost.
I was on the field, so I vaguely remember that. I mean, I don't remember. I mean, you know, comparing 82 when I was on the field to 85, it was like night and day. I mean, there were some fans down there, but in 1982, when Auburn beat Alabama for the first time in 9 years, I literally had to take off sprinting because everyone was in danger on that field, just like in Knoxville two years later when Tennessee upset Alabama. I never felt that concern. There were a lot of people on that field after the 85 game, but I was only down on the north end zone, so I could have missed it, but I don't remember it quite that way. But I trust you. Were you down there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we were at the game. We were in the south corner where the band was at, and the fans stormed the field, but they never brought down the goalpost.
Well, I will say that was quite a win. I mean, I've always thought even with the kick six and so many other games, I've never seen a better fourth quarter in my life. Thank you very much for the call. Let's continue with your phone calls here. And how about Greg, who is up next? Hey, Greg, thank you, and good afternoon.
Hello.
Yeah, good afternoon, Greg. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? Doing good today. Just had to pick up income taxes.
it is that week.
Other than that, quick comment. You know, you were talking about last week about Banks and Woodlawn. I was going to Huffman over there in Center Point, and we had our homecoming game that night, and a lot of people skipped that game to go watch the Banks-Woodlawn game, which was a very good game, but I thought I'd comment on that.
That is can you imagine skipping your own homecoming to go watch a high school football game? The game was that big, I would think, just in terms of the buildup. I know we're still talking about it 50 years later, so I get it.
I didn't realize that. I thought it was like 20,000, but when you said 43, I said, okay, that was quite a few people there. But it was definitely a good game. And from years after Banks and Woodlawn, always it was a good game, no matter what year they played.
Well, Greg, thank you for sharing that story. And can you take your homecoming date to another high school game?
We did that night. but the quick question was, and I know you don't have any control over scheduling, but I noticed that this year they're not showing too many spring practices on the SEC channel. I know they got Alabama on the ESPN channel, but as far as SEC, It's all on the plus. Do you have any idea why they're not showing them this year?
Greg, that is very interesting that you picked up on that, and I thought I was seeing that the same way when I don't know, but I have a theory on that. I'd rather get some information that is solid before I give you my theory, okay?
Well, I tell you, I tried to try it out just to be ready for the Auburn game or the spring game, and because they're still at lockdown at 20% attendance. And so I was going to see it on hopefully on SEC channel, but when I looked and it says it's on SEC Plus, and I tried it out today to see if I could pick up your show, and no doing. And I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be a little harder to get. And I didn't know if you had any idea.
Yeah, Greg, I will say in years past, usually there's a game or two on ESPN. There may be a game on ESPNU, and then the rest of them are on the SEC network. And I've also remember in years past, the games were staggered where, you remember, I think Vanderbilt had a Friday night game one year, and then the next week you would see two or three schools. I will see if I can find you an answer. Now, I do find it interesting that that everyone is not having a spring game this year. I know some schools have already wrapped things up. I was talking to a Missouri coach the other day, and he told me they wanted to get done early so that, you know, in case they had any injuries or whatever. But it's a good question, and I think it's a legitimate question, and we'll maybe the folks in the control room can walk down the hall and ask one of the suits.
Well, it would be nice because I tell you, I tried to run that rabbit down the hole, and everywhere I turned, it kept saying you need to, you know, subscribe to ESPN, and I just could not figure out how to do it. And then I have Dish, and I'm thinking, okay, this should be pretty easy. But it seems to be a lot of SEC now being replayed, but not many football games on.
Well, Greg, I will see if somebody that is far higher up than I am, which would be pretty much everyone in the company, we'll see if we can get you an answer. How about that?
Well, thank you very much. It's good talking to you today.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and I say this not about this weekend, but this is the new world that we live in. That a lot of things are slowly shifting toward digital, in this case ESPN Plus. Let's check out Matt, who is up next. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing good, Mr. Paul Feinbaum. Paul, I wanted to say something to you real quick before I talk about Texas A&M football. Paul, I want to thank you for all these years you've been so kind to me and all the kindness you've shown me for being a good friend, Mr. Paul Feinbaum. I just want to thank you for that.
Well, Matt, thank you, and I want to thank you as well, because I thought your call the other day was fantastic, and I know all of us behind the scenes were cheering for you the way you absolutely obliterated that guy who was making fun of your school.
Thank you, Paul. Well, I wanted to share some bad news for you before I talk about Texas A&M and football. Paul, I'm not going back to school this year. I got to take care of some things in my life, Paul, and improve my reading. I'm going back to school next year in 2022, but I want to thank you for just being a really good friend to me in my life, Paul.
Well, Matt, thank you, and I'm sorry to hear that, but I understand, and if there's anything I can ever do to help you, you just let me know. Thanks, my friend, and hang in there. We will take a break. Up against a break here, more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We'll also talk to Mina Kimes in the final hour, in the third hour, I should say, which is the hour coming up next, about the NFL draft. We are back after this.